One, two, three, four.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. And Ricky playing a little Bohemian Rhapsody 50 years ago today. It was it's a combination of, what, three songs, Ricky? Well, Kevin probably knows more about this than me. Do we have Kevin?
You have me, but I don't know a damn thing about the song's etymology.
It was evidently the guy was working on three songs. Yeah, let it go a little bit, Ricky. And he put them all together. That's why it's called a Rhapsody. Classic time, classic song, eh?
I'll buy that. So that's probably the only excuse you can have for not having Halloween bumper music instead.
Yeah, you know, I'm not. Are you a big Halloween guy? I never kind of was, but.
No, but I do have a nice Hawaiian shirt and Halloween theme.
Well, there you go. I just hope tonight that some of the see some interesting costumes. You usually do. The guy who used to run the Ceres Cafe, Billy Asimos, a friend of mine. He was huge on Halloween, and he did all kinds of stuff in there and made everybody get an outfit, and he had he had the big scarecrow in there and all the stuff and the pumpkins and the whole bit. He was really big on it, and it was fun. Well, he made to say they had a lot of attractive young ladies, and they all dressed up, and they all looked very nice. It was you just sit there, and it's a scenery, Kevin. What can I say? It's a scenery, right?
Well, we got a lot of people around in the area who, you know, really do up there. Yards for Halloween. I go all out. I have a windsock in front of that. I always have a windsock hanging out front, and I switched it this week to a Halloween windsock.
Well, there you go. You're into it. So what do you think tonight?
I'm participating. I just don't go to much trouble to do it.
So you're not. Do you got a bunch of candy? People come by your place?
Some years we have a lot. Some years we have virtually none. So I always have some candy.
We had, when I first moved into the hood, or my neighborhood, Lincoln Park, there was still a...
It ain't the hood.
Well, there was a couple of remaining African-American families down on Maud Street.
African-American doesn't make it the hood either.
I know, but I mean, they were... Somehow they stayed when everybody else was essentially yuppied out of the place. And, they would come by with a bunch of kids, and I always had a bunch of candy for them. And then there'd be a big group that came by where all the dads mostly would have a big coaster wagon loaded with booze. And all the kids would come up to the door. So you get like two groups. But now the African-American families have been essentially bought out, and the dads have given up. So I haven't really had a trick-or-treater in years. Of course, I'm not usually home, but... It was always kind of fun. It was two really good groups. All the black kids were cute as hell, and they were really polite. And the parents would come by with the other guys, and they were all booze. And I don't know if you wanted a drink, but you're handing out candy to all their kids. It was kind of fun. But we used to go constantly when we were kids, for God's sake. I mean, our neighborhood was, you know, everybody had a house. Every 30 feet, there was a house. So you'd make a pretty good haul if you wanted to. It was back, we didn't have to worry about people putting like razor blades in your stuff and everything. Because I'm not sure people do that now either, but everybody's always afraid of everything, it seems. But what do you like tonight? World Series.
I don't know. Who's pitching?
The guy who could pitch the complete game, I think, is pitching for the Dodgers. What's his name?
Asian guy.
Yeah, he's really good. And I guess if it goes seven, Ohtani says he'll pitch tomorrow. So they got a couple of guys that can pitch. But Toronto...
Yeah, Ohtani wasn't that good last time out, though.
No. But he seems eager to do better, let's put it that way. Well, the other guy's pretty good. He's pretty awesome. Now, whether they can do that two games in a row, that's kind of hard to do. But the Toronto, I mean, they got some guys. That Guerrero's a hell of a player, isn't he?
Well, they have a lot of good players, yeah.
I
think they're going to get the third baseman back tonight.
Yeah, I think so. I don't forget his name, but
Mark Springer.
I was pretty anxious. I mean, that For a while, I got to watch Seattle and Toronto, the teams I never see. And boy, they have some good players on both of those teams.
Yes, they do. And you know what's kind of interesting is that when the Dodgers won Game 3, the 18 inning game, conventional winning wisdom was, well, you know, Game 3 winners always win the series anyway, and that's just such a disheartening loss for Toronto that they're not, you know, they're cooked, it's over, and conventionalism has been wrong again.
Well, baseball is probably one of the most interesting games at the major league level. I mean, softball, I mean, the same people play every night, but a major league level, every day is a new pitcher, every pitcher is a new day, isn't it, pretty much? I mean, it really does turn the page more in Major League Baseball than I think you do in anything else.
Momentum is your next day's starting pitcher.
Yeah, pretty much is. I mean, you could have beat the crap out of the Phillies, and if Carlton's pitching the next day, you're an underdog, right? Back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Kevin, you sent something around. Yeah, we've touched on it for all the years we've been doing the show, having to do with what these major corporations that are, I'll use, what do you want the term, worldwide corporations or multinational, or multinational, I guess is the term. And I always, this is the year I'm actually going to buy the damn thing so I can read it to everybody. You know, the page in there was in the sovereign state of ITT regarding the musings of their chairman, Harold Janine. And it has to do with the company's going to be here forever. Essentially, countries come and go. Certainly, their leadership comes and goes. And it's up to the business world to make a lot of dough and to make the world right, because you can't count on all these other idiots to do it. So this week, Kevin sent around to, actually yesterday, sent around to the people that are on Stocks and Jacks. We, you know, we obviously communicate amongst each other to try and figure out what the hell we're going to talk about. And he sent around something around about how some of the U.S. corporations, and I'm kind of surprised at the one that's the worst name, has been helping China for years, putting together all this surveillance system and stuff for their people. And Kevin, we've had people on the show that have accused them of using this surveillance system on their people they send here, like for school and everything, right? And almost at a point where we're having
their social scoring system applies to their Chinese citizens in the U.S., and the penalties for not being a good Chinese citizen will find their way back to the families.
Well, and isn't, for a while, was it Carl or Lou was talking about, they actually have, for lack of a better term, storefront, like, police offices in countries. And I think the last time we talked about it, New York let them have one, but Chicago, but a couple of countries overseas that they had ongoing, you know, essentially police departments, office in you know, Manhattan or someplace, or in Brooklyn, and where they could essentially enforce rules against people that are in college here and so forth. And you know, we never really dug too much into that. But what Kevin sent around yesterday, which I found, by the way, thank you for that, I had to do with some companies here that really helped them do that. And I guess I would never have picked IBM as the biggest name. I don't know why, but I don't know why I would never would have.
IBM seems to like being out of the news for anything except maybe you know, their own products, and so they are pretty good at managing the their publicity cycle.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't know what to make of it, Kevin. I mean, my first thought is, if they're putting together a security system to track people in China, I wouldn't put it past somebody here, you know, whoever it might be, just be the FBI or anybody, and I'm not talking about any administration or other, but a lot of people here think that you got to keep closer tabs of your citizens. I'm not so sure someone isn't spilling over, are you?
Well, what do you think digital IDs are about?
Well, yeah, I mean, when you think about, we talked one day about, you know, just the real ID, going back to 9/11. In fact, not one of those guys used a driver's license to get in the country. So, what's the point? I mean, it's once people get their teeth sunk into it and get the contracts, it just kind of moves on its own, doesn't it?
Yeah, and we've talked about, you know, metadata as a data gathering technique. You know, that's the data about the data. So I don't have to read your text messages when I know the date, time, length of message, and sending phone number and receiving phone number for every single text message that runs through the United States, then I know a heck of a lot about what people are learning. Same thing with voicemail messages. You know, if I get a voicemail, let's just say I get a voicemail from a psychiatrist's office once a week, every Tuesday, what does that tell you?
Well, what if we talk to Dr. Blade? It means we're going to a shrink?
Well, it could be, but if I'm getting a call every week, every doctor in the world gives you a reminder call.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So if I'm getting a weekly call, that means I have a weekly psychiatrist appointment.
Hell, my chiro's starting to do that. It's kind of a pain in the ass.
Whose business is that? Whose business is that?
Well,
if I get a call, if a woman gets a call from an OB-GYN and then picks up the phone within the hour and calls Planned Parenthood, what do you know about her?
I'm thinking she might be pregnant.
Well, she's pregnant, but you know more than that. If she's calling Planned Parenthood, she's contemplating an abortion. That's the government's business?
How do we stop it?
The extent that they call through it is, you know, that's another thing. You do that all via algorithm anyway. But the question is, with all the data gathering going on, you get the the CIA people and so on, when they're asked about it, they say, we're not listening to your calls, we're not reading your text messages, we just collect the metadata. Well, guess what? You're learning a whole lot about me that's none of your damn business. So the surveillance state exists already here. It's just, you know, to what extent do we go? Chinese have taken it farther. They've taken it farther with the social scoring methodology. But the other article I sent in tandem with that is that you actually have U.S. companies who are working with the Chinese. We limit what we are allowed to send them in terms of the most recent technology. And the workaround has been, hey, just subscribe to our cloud service and we will let you have access to that same technology.
Kevin, expand it.
You rent it from us instead of buying it.
Expand on that a little bit for the listeners, because I read it and so did you. But expand what you're saying about that.
Well, what I'm saying is, so when we talk, we talk a lot about chip technology, but it's really processor technology. It's not like these AI type of processors that NVIDIA is sending out. Are chips. They're processors. They're much bigger than a microchip, and so we don't allow a company like NVIDIA to export to China the latest and greatest in their processor technology. They have to be a generation or two behind.
Supposedly.
But let's just go with
that.
Go with it.
Yeah. All right.
So. What's the workaround? Well, I can't send you the processor to put into your own computers, but how about you subscribe to my service and I'll give you access to the processor by allowing you to connect to it.
Well, wouldn't that mean that we would know everything they were doing? Or somebody would?
Well, somebody would.
We'd
have to issue a subpoena, but it doesn't matter. What we're really saying is, here we have a workaround for you. The United States won't let us export. We'll export anyway. We'll just do it a different way.
What I say when I sent it, I said, I
have no grand delusions that we're going to have patriotic U.S. companies, U.S. multinational companies that are patriotic. And want to stand by the United States foreign policy objectives. No delusions of grandeur there. Do you think
there should be?
Well, I don't know. I don't necessarily. No, actually, as you asked that, no, not necessarily, because they do business in a lot of places. They count on doing business in a lot of places, and so. You know, they don't have to be an arm of the government. On the other hand, they don't have to undermine their home government either.
There's a fine line there. I mean, you could. We both know some attorneys in Chicago that you know, don't really like it when there's a contested mayor's race, because they gotta give money to both sides. I don't know that I like the idea that a firm might say, gee, 30 years ago, 30 years from now, the U.S. might implode and China might be the number one dog. We want to make sure we're there. It's funny, Kevin, when you watch the Star Trek, you know, I was always a Star Trek guy, but like the Next Generation, they always had the ability to snoop in anybody's cabin and find out if they were having sex. They just seem to have, the morality seemed to have caught up with the technology to where nobody even considered doing that. I'm not so sure our morality has caught up to the technology. I mean, as a matter of fact, I think it's way behind. I don't even know what you could tell IBM what would be right or wrong. I mean, I know what I would tell them, but I'm not so sure there would be agreement on that across the board, and certainly they wouldn't agree. I don't, in terms of telling them, no, you can't do that. Well, you know, how do we know it's not defense weapons too? And how do we know that the same stuff, I mean, what the president's always talking about?
They're not using the capacity.
Yeah, this whole trip to China, and I'm not blaming him, because this thing has been a goat bleep for 30 years with China. Are they an enemy? Are they a friend or a competitor? I mean, what the hell are they? You know, and he's got his own style about it, but I'm not saying, which I think kind of sucks, but I don't think it's any worse than the guy before him or the guy before that either. So, I mean, I'm not sure what the policy ought to be, to be honest with you, so it's hard to criticize, but the idea that you can somehow make a six-month deal, I mean, Biden was no better, and I'm not so sure I'd be any better, but the point is, I don't know what to do here, do you?
What six-month deal are you talking about?
Well, I'm saying that, you know, we're going to do this. All right, well, we're going to give you this because we're going to pull back on the terrorists. Because I mean, I don't know that I don't even know what kind of a deal you want to have with somebody who you think might be an enemy. I'm not sure where anybody's even going there in terms of what the base is. I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying I'm not sure how you even put it together. Do you? Well, I mean, what are they?
If you want to talk about this specific deal, I do think it makes sense to have a deal to get them, even if it's only a year, to back off on the rare earth restrictions, as an example. And that's not just for the U.S. They actually backed off for the whole world. And meanwhile, as you saw as part of the trip, was to start cutting deals for access to rare earth minerals from countries like Australia, Malaysia, and there are a couple others in the Far East that were part of that. So really what you're doing is you're buying time. When you have to go back to the bargaining table in a year, you're going back with a little less dependence on China for those materials. So, you know, when you start working on some of this kind of stuff, there's a part of you that has to be realistic in that, we're kind of stuck. You know, we can't just say, we can't just give them the finger and walk away, because all of a sudden a whole bunch of things would shut down.
Well, there's no question.
You have to kind of navigate your way through this, and in that regard, I thought it was a worthwhile trip. Now, you know, again, as with anything as it relates to China, until they actually do it, until they actually do anything, it isn't done.
But what is our long-term story with rare earths? I mean, if we don't want to have any of the processing here, I don't see how we maybe could get Australia to put it out in the outback where they don't seem to care either. Or maybe they do, maybe they don't. I don't know that about Australia, but we're still not wanting to do it here. I don't know how we ever get ahead of this ball, do you?
I think the current administration does want to do it here, but that, again, that's a ramp up that's going to take
time. We're talking 10 years, right?
Well, you might start to get some yield out of it sooner than that. But
I'm not talking about the mining. I'm talking about, because we have mines here. I think a lot of the stuff that goes to China comes from here, right? That big, huge mountain in California, isn't there one in Texas? I mean, I think we have the
big, huge mountain.
I mean, we went through this with Carl a long time ago. There's some big, massive mountain in California. They used to do some processing here, then the mountain and the processing were both shut down, and the mountain was put back online, but they're sending the stuff to China. I mean, it's kind of a... Then there's some place in Texas that they I was reading this whole thing about it, and they know the thing's loaded with rare earth, but they haven't started mining it yet. And I mean, it's not like we don't have any.
Right. Yeah. I agree. And what all I'm saying is, it may be 10 years to get to full capacity, but it may be 18 months to get to some capacity.
If anybody wants it to be any, I mean, how I guess.
Well, that's if it happens at all.
The question is, how dirty is it? I mean, it's a. I thought Bill gave us a real, Bill Moriarty gave us a real good...
It's how dirty has it been, it's how dirty does it have to be.
Yeah. Well, you know, Bill gave us a full rendition on Wednesday, about how even like a water treatment plant, I mean, where you put the stuff, and if you're going to have a desalination facility, okay, what do you do with the brine? I mean, these are kind of long-term questions. But when you say, same question I sort of had to Bill on Wednesday, we're just tossing the questions out there, we don't know the answer, but... Even if you were to put a nuclear plant up right now, I mean, Carl has identified three different systems. I don't know that you would take the same one you put up 60 years ago and put the same damn thing up. I suspect you wouldn't. So I don't know how long even the design discussion, we'll use that term, argument discussion, would take before you even settled on one. And like Bill was saying, if it's a new technology, you might put some kind of a small one up some places to see if it works. That's probably a 3 or 4 year deal. I don't know, when we say we want to have a rare earth processing facility, is there some guy that sells them off his bookshelf? Or I mean, who even makes those damn things? I mean, when was the last time we made one? Or do you make one?
I don't know, but because I don't know doesn't mean there isn't somebody
doing it. I'm saying, when you say, well, throw one of those up, well, wait a minute, what exactly are one of those? I mean, who does it, who works at it, who designs it? I mean, These are. I keep thinking.
It could wind up being a government contract. That just getting the contracts lined up could take 5 years.
You know, as you know, Kevin, in the back of my mind is always a rail car contract, and I multiply the complexity of these things by like 20,000 compared to a rail car contract. I knew how complicated those were to get them going and get everything ordered. And God, how do you start ordering nuts and bolts for a? A rare earth processing facility, but who even starts to design that thing? I mean, I don't even know. I mean, Bill Moriarty was saying if you're talking about water treatment facilities, there's probably 400 of them going in around the world at any given time, and these engineering firms can just say which kind you want, and they'll put one up for you. But it's still not easy. But I don't know. I mean, who even is the engineering firm behind these things? Is there somebody, or are they just? I don't know. I mean, how does it even work?
So you would need an operation warp speed type of initiative that really puts it on the fast track. Not that I'm happy with what we actually had for operation warps.
Yeah, that didn't work out.
But the notion itself, that's what you need to do.
Yeah, I do wonder on the morality of. I think I don't have a problem, Kevin. I don't know where the line is. I don't think that there's a problem with IBM doing business overseas. That can't be the answer. But the other part is there's got to be something where if you know it's kind of immoral here or we wouldn't allow it here, doing it for some other government or some other, banana republic dictator with the idea that you can turn around and sell it to other people, I guess I got a problem with that. I don't know where the line is.
Well, we do have the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, so that should guide it somewhat in that...
I think that one's going away to dodo birds.
If it's illegal here, it's illegal. It's illegal there.
Well, I mean, the Chinese stuff is illegal here. Keeping track of people, what they do all day. Well, yeah, maybe it is or maybe it isn't. I don't know.
Maybe that's how you put a stop to it. Maybe you prosecute it.
Matter of fact, we had an angry rant from one of the listeners... I was talking the other day about what happened to the PTI website and how some people stole pictures and stuff of people off our website, made another one, and how Google didn't care, even though these people are paying them to get ahead of us, they didn't care. They just came back and said not our problem, which is interesting for a firm that big. GoDaddy says, well, it's not our problem, even though the name is registered there, and I get this letter from. A listener saying, if they don't care about putting Jamie Dimon in jail, why the hell would they care about your stuff? And I go, well, that's one hell of an attitude about the world. But is that where we are? Nobody cares about anybody? So actually, I was told by FINRA to make sure you let the, you know, since they're trying to get money out of people in Canada using not really our name, but very close to it. They can't exactly use our name exactly, but it's close enough. And they said, well, you gotta make sure you gotta register this with the FBI. So with all this stuff with the FBI, I go to the FBI site. The FBI site is down, Kevin, for registering fraud. So then they said, well, go to this alternative site. Evidently, there's some group, I don't know who the hell they are, that you register all your internet fraud or fraud attempts or people, whatever, that you know of, any kind of a complaint. And they allegedly sprinkle it out to all the law enforcement people. Well, that was 10 days ago. I've not gotten anything back saying they received it. They did it. There's where we are. I think our stuff here is, it's been going downhill for years, and it's still going downhill. Nobody cares about any of this stuff that's happening. And that's why it happens, I think, to be honest with you. Who's in charge of spanking Google? Anybody? If you say, hey, these guys are using my name, by the way, they're paying you because they come up first in the search, and they go, not my problem. Where's my appeal to that when somebody's that big? None.
Right. So spanking Google, is that what the kids are calling it today?
Well, I don't know, but Google's up today. It's big news last night. Amazon, their cloud's evidently doing pretty good. They're up 12%. Google's up and Apple's up. So today is a good day. Yesterday was a bad day. We had Meta down a bunch. And we had, Google's down yesterday, but now they're up today. No, Meta was one that was down $76 yesterday. They're back up 10 today. You got to buy the dip.
And where did they finish?
They were down 76 all day. And they didn't bounce off the low at all. But now today they're up $10. So they're 676. I think they were like 740 before that. So we've seen big moves on some of these earnings. eBay was down 15%. With a lot of stuff, you know, two and three times a straddle. When I say that, the if you look at say a stock is $100. If you look at the 100 line, the call and the put, that's called the straddle. So if you add together the call price and the put price, say it's Thursday and you look at the Friday expiration, that's the market expectation of what. How much the stock's going to move between now and Friday. And if it's a standard deviation move, it should move, it's going to be 66% of the time it should be within that straddle, if you knew your statistics, which I used to know. When it comes earning, though, on these option models, this is where you have to be careful, and Kevin knows what I'm talking about. The option models assume a steady flow of information. Well, duh. We know that the world is not a steady flow of information. It either could be coming out of Washington, out of the Fed, out of the company itself. Who the hell knows? But obviously, the earnings day is a discrete day that's different from all other days. You know, well, it might not be different if they come out and say that the president has been a crook or something. But by and large, the single biggest information day of any company is the earnings day, unless there's a war or something. This, when you look at what the earnings are and you add up the call and the put, you'll say the stock could be trading 100 and all of a sudden the call and the put together are $12, and you say, okay, the market is saying that there's basically a 60% chance that it 66.6 that it's between the stock's going to open up between 88 and 112. And for years and years the markets are pretty damn good at this until kind of recently in the last two or three or four years. I mean, I'm not blaming it and the president or anybody. I'm just saying it could be that the companies don't give as much information as they used to. Could be if anybody actually pays attention to, you know, Reg FD, full disclosure, which I don't think half of them do. But anyway, I've seen more in the last year, because we do these spreads all the time for some clients. And I've seen more 2 and 3 and 4 times straddle moves in the last year than I've ever seen before, Kevin. I don't know what that means. Whether companies aren't, maybe the analyst community, since commissions have gone way down, firms don't have as many analysts actually tracking companies. Maybe it's harder to get supply chain information on some of these people. I don't know, but whatever it is, the market's ability to predict the move is dramatically less than it was. Plus, these moves are happening after the market closed. I think Kevin Smith so long ago that when I started the business, I recall that they used to like stop trading at 10 o'clock in the morning, put out the earnings, have the conference call, and reopen again at 11 or something, when everybody's here and everybody's doing this stuff. That would be, to me, to be the sane way to do this. But no, they do it after the close or before the opening when you're not very many players. So if all of a sudden the thing starts to move, you know, 10, 15, 20%, there's nobody there, really, that's going to be trading this stuff. And if you're caught short or caught long and it's going the wrong way, you're essentially chasing it with no audience. So why we don't pick a time during the middle of the day for these earnings to come out, it probably is because the people who do trade it make a lot of money on it because they're the only people making a market. I mean, it's another one of those things in the, you know, if I was king and could change some of the stuff in the market, that's one of the things I'd change. But so I mean, in other words, I don't think if Amazon came out at 10 o'clock today, it'd be up $28. It might be up 20 or 18, but I think with more players involved and with people with orders in the book and things like that, like you would have during the day, that these moves would be less aggrieved, shall we put it that way. So there. And I, you know, and we're down to only four or five people, or maybe 10, but four or five really big ones that are providing these markets to the, and I'll tell you what, the markets suck in some of these stocks. And we mostly do for my protected index program, well, for all of our protected, and we have at least the stuff we stay in, whether it's individual indexes within the, could be the XLE, could be the XLV, could be the Spider, could be the Qs, whatever it is, those things are pretty liquid. And that's the reason why we stay there, because if you have to make a move in the options or make a roll, you want to be in a place where it's trading. But now when I do all these earnings plays, I check out all these other stocks, Kevin. The markets are horrible. They're horrible. But we don't want any more market makers. The same five people say they're fine. But I look at this stuff, some of these markets are $2 and $3 wide. I don't know how the hell what are they even doing? I mean, whoever was ever designing this market, it's if we do have a move one day that's really crazy, like 10, 15, 20% one way or the other, I don't trust the, you better have your puts already, because you're not going to get them from these guys. I mean, it's another one of these types of designs where we're left with four and five people, and if they can do whatever they want, and nobody can control them. Sort of like IBM, sort of like Google. And we're seeing this almost in every industry. It's not the current guy in the White House. It's been going on for how long, Kevin? I mean, this is the direction we're going, and I think most people don't even know we're going there. And when we get there, I don't think they're all be that happy. I don't know, what do you think? I'm doing all the talking.
Well, other than to say, I think in the larger corporations, that is the way we're going. When you get back down to the smaller corporations that make up the lion's share of the economy, it's a little bit different scenario.
Well, I think the only problem with what you just said, and by the way, I'm agreeing with you 100%. The only problem with that is every year, what you just said is the major part of the economy gets less and less true. The top five or six or ten stocks now are worth what the entire Russell, for God's sake. I mean, it's not even close. How many small businesses that you talk about and that I talk about and that we care about, you and I, how many do any one of those do all of those add up to half the market cap of NVIDIA?
Well, they don't. So as a percentage of the economy, yes, you're correct. What I'm saying is, though, if you're looking for, you know, the economy where you live, you know, and trading in the major categories, and that's one thing. Come over here where I live, and it's a completely different world.
Well,
there is nobody with the possible exception of Whirlpool in this area that is anywhere near that influential, that large. They're influential locally. They're tremendously influential locally, but they are not influential in terms of the national economy.
I absolutely agree. I know I'm trying to, and you don't know the answer to this, and neither do I, but I'm just kind of lobbing the question out there. And I think you do a lot of work with people like that, and we've got places growing, and I have nephews and stuff that work in those kinds of places, and I'm all for them, and I try and give the best advice, and if they have, you know, some kind of a, you know, a paper they're putting in or a project, if I can help them, I will, because I have a little more experience. But I also know that in one day, the guy who runs Oracle, and I'm not even really a fan, made enough money to buy every newspaper and half the football teams in the country. And it's so overwhelming, Kevin. You don't almost don't even you know it's hard to even conceive of it. And I don't know what the end game of that is. Are they going to own every football team? Are they going to own every newspaper? I mean, it looks like maybe. I mean, I don't know. You're right, but it's almost like we're plodding along in with Piper Cubs. All of a sudden, some guy flies by in a B-1 bomber, and we go, "What the hell's that?" I mean, we're not even close anymore. I guess what I'm saying. I don't know. There needs to be a solution. I don't know if it's that big of a problem, but it just seems weird to me, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know. Weird's not the word I'd use, but it's where we've been headed for a long time.
And I don't know. Do we really want the heads of the five major corporations owning the five biggest newspapers?
No.
How do you stop it? If you wanted to, how do you stop it? I mean,
ought to be a law, Tom.
Well, I mean, do you think that some of these companies, and you know more about the individual places. I mean, Microsoft, to me, has been the most silent, as all the other people do, their combinations and restraint of trade. I think that Microsoft has been the best at that over the last 30 years than virtually anybody else. I mean, if it's something out there that they like.
Silent but deadly?
Yeah, silent but deadly. We used to talk about that and other things, didn't we? anyway, I mean, I will say this, out of all the people we've had as presidents, Trump might be the only guy who had the balls if he wanted to do it. What do you do? Do you break them back up to where they were 4 years ago? And say, no, these companies that you, what do you do? One of my listeners, our listeners, called up and said, this TikTok deal that Trump's doing with Oracle, he goes, I trust the guy who runs Oracle less than I do the Chinese. They have all my information. I'm not so sure that's a step up. I didn't know what to say to him. What do I say to him?
What you say to him is, and this would be for anybody, and yet we're so damn addicted to this stuff that we can't handle it, is be careful about how you share your information with anyone. We're just so stupid when it comes to that as a society.
Well, I understand she passed. One of the ladies on the trading floor, Juanita, of course, she was a little heavier set and was from Hawaii because her nickname was Pineapple, right? The nicest people I've ever met. And Kevin, every Christmas she would make, I don't know how many people she had help her, she would make these rum balls. And she'd bring enough in for, like, the entire OEX pit, like 350 people. And, I mean, you had two or three of these things. You're buzzed at 9 in the morning. I don't know when she put the rum in, but it didn't cook away. I never wanted to ask her how she made it. But anyway, she's the nicest person. She was one of the quote reporters that was one of the best that hung in there till essentially the very end. And she'd go into the Dunkin' Donuts with us in the morning. And, Maddie and I are coming in doing Stacks and Jacks. So Juanita was on the early. She became one of the regulators, and she'd get her coffee, and she'd whack the machine, and with her, whatever you do with the code. So I'd paid for the coffee, and then I'd take out my wallet, and I'd whack the machine. And she goes, "Tommy, what are you doing?" I said, I just got your password. By the way, thanks for lunch. She looks at me. You wouldn't do that, would you? What? I said, I wouldn't, but I probably could. She looks at me and goes, I said, Juanita, pay cash, will you? What's the matter with you? obviously, in this world, my advice there, if I sound like some kind of a, somebody from the 19th century, but why do you have to tell the Dunkin' Donuts, why do you have to give Dunkin' Donuts your goddamn password? What's wrong with us? But how do you know who's hacking into that thing?
I don't know why would you give them a password?
Well, wouldn't that use your debit card or something? I mean, this is a way when you had to actually type in your code when they first, for the debit cards first came out.
Yeah, type in your PIN?
Yeah.
That's not so bad. That gets encrypted.
Well, okay, but I'm saying, I used to get all my concerns about this from Matt Weber because he worked for an internet securities firm. So I get, one night he sees me, parking the car, and you gotta pay to park, right, with the new, don't get me started on that deal. So I put my card in there, he goes, "What are you doing, Chief?" I said, "What do you mean, I'm paying for parking?" He goes, "Don't ever put your card in one of those things." You don't want the apps. Get that app or get some coins. Don't ever put your card, because it's so easy to steal out of those things. It's scary. I used to get all these warnings from Matty. He got his card got hacked at the Tripoli Tap one night. They put some machine in there. By the way, have you seen the proliferation now of just about in every gas station? The place where I get coffee on North Avenue, if the ATM, you can buy a Bitcoin in the damn thing.
A lot of Bitcoin ATMs around now.
You know, we could have bought one of those things. They were like, I looked maybe, when did Bitcoin first come out? Like 6-8 years ago? I think a Bitcoin machine was like $8,000 or something. You could put it someplace, and at the time, they said it had all the capability of being an ATM machine as well, but they hadn't been allowed to do that yet. But if the Bitcoin thing went away, you could use it as an ATM machine. So, I mean, they're all combined, and if you want to pay bills, you can pay with your Bitcoin. I mean, this is crazy. But anyway, so what do you think about tomorrow in the football? We talked a little bit Wednesday about these colleges and My guy over at the club is so happy Kelly's gone. By the way, I have a picture for you I got to send you. I got to forward. Our friend John Short sent me this picture that when Brian Kelly first got hired at Notre Dame. And John is, I guess he lives only a mile away from, who was the guy before, Harbrick? What was his name, Schwarbrick, the AD? Who was the AD that hired Kelly? Is it Schwarbrick? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Schwarbrick.
Well, here's a picture of John Short with his arms around Schwarbrick and Kelly, like the week Kelly was hired, and everybody's beaming, the big smiles and everything. He sends it to him, and he goes, "Don't send this to anybody. I think I should destroy it."
And yet you're going to send it to me.
I would send it. I know you can keep a secret. Maybe I won't send it to me. I'll just show it to you next time I see you.
I'm going to say, there's only one way to keep a secret.
Oh, yeah, don't tell anybody.
Tell anybody.
Well, all right, I'll let you see it next time I see you. How's that? Anyway, to say that everybody was smiling and beaming, Kelly looked younger. He's a lot thinner. Of course, we all looked younger back then, but kind of an interesting pick. They thought they had the absolute cat's meow with that guy, didn't they? The Irish hired him.
Well, they did, but he was the typical flavor of the day coach. He had, we talked about this on Wednesday. Yeah. If you haven't been any place for a long time, you don't know what the program is going to look like.
Well, do you think any of these guys, when I say these guys, the winning coaches of the last 20 years, do you think any of them have the skill set to handle whatever it is we're doing now? But to me, it's like so much different.
Well, you probably would do well hiring an assistant. Hiring a coordinator off of somebody else's team, because they're the ones that have been living it most recently.
You think so? They're the guys that do all that?
Correctly.
Who actually, Kevin, who in the pantheon of people, when there's 15 new names in the portal, who actually says, okay, who looks at the guys and say, well, this guy's a regular schlump, we're going to give him the $20,000 a year regular sub lineman number, and this guy we better hook up with, Under Armour, or this guy's a star, and we got to find a way to get him $2 million. Where the hell are we going to get that? And who coordinates all that? Is it a guy or is it a group now?
Well, schools have taken to hiring a general manager, and they give him the title of general manager.
But I mean, I'm just curious.
And that's the person who has the staff and who coordinates it all.
I guess if the
works with the coaching staff to make it happen.
I'm just curious if you and I got the job, how would we even do it? Unless we recruited the guy from high school, and now he's a sophomore and he's never played, but he claims he's right there. How would you know whether he's ready to step in or not? Can you make a campus visit in the portal, or what do you do?
Well, once they put their name in, they can come visit the campus, and they do. They make recruiting trips.
So they go see five or six schools that are essentially do a tryout of some kind.
Yeah, I don't know how much they work them out or not, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's a physical. They certainly get to see them and see what they look like. Is this guy grown up? Et cetera. So
how far? To me, it would seem like, boy, I'd want to
But now this general manager and general manager staff is mimics a pro franchise's staff that keeps track of everybody. So it's not like the it's not like Billy Donovan is scouting players all year to see who they might want to sign next year in free agency. Who the Bulls want to sign. He's coaching his team. He has a general manager whose job is to do that.
But he also is there. He's going to play against a guy 3-4 times a year. He's got a pretty good idea.
Yeah, but again, Donovan's not going to be out scouting college talent either from the draft.
Well, I just it seems like we're somebody's very close to practice starts on August 10th. And oh, by the way, all the guys who want to come here. Be here on August 3rd, and we're going to try everybody out, and we're going to cut your ass if we don't. You're not as good as you think you were, or whatever. And as a matter of fact, we had a group last night, and one of the guys is a Notre Dame grad student. We went to business school there, and he was talking about scholarships, and I said, "Roy, it's not about scholarships anymore." And he goes, "It seems like some of these guys, they don't need a scholarship because they could pay their own way." I said, "That's why." Was it a couple of years ago, Kevin? They said you can only have 85 guys on the team. They don't care if you're on scholarships or not, right? Isn't that? I mean, you can't have 85 guys on scholarship and another 30 that are paying their own way because you found them $1 million a throw. I mean, how does that all work now?
Well, there's always been a restriction on whether you were a recruited athlete or not and how you applied against your roster limits. So that's always been a factor. So they've sort of baked that into the equation. Honestly, I don't know how they've reworked it in for the current situation, but they probably have tried to address it.
Well, what's the? I thought there was an NCAA out peep about this. I mean, I don't think you can. You know, Kevin was a pretty good football player, but if you all of a sudden grew that summer, and you showed up. Freshman year, and there, you could go out as a walk-on, and you went out, and all of a sudden you were impressed. They give you a scholarship, but if they didn't, you could play. I don't think you can anymore.
I don't know how that works. I can't comment on it. I'm not sure how it works.
I'll try and dig that, because I know there was some announcement we talked about a while ago that said they're limiting the amount of players on the team, and it didn't really matter whether you were a scholarship or not. I wonder if that made it through, or they were thinking about it, or what. Well, I'll do a little bit of research on that. So what do you think this weekend? Who are the good teams playing the good teams?
Well, let's see, because there are a few good games. Let's go to the top 25 games and see what we have. .com. I really suck at typing.
That was not our shtick. I even took a typing class, and I still suck at it. Of course, I was 13 years old, or 16. I think...
That's why,
Well, the Irish are playing Boston College away, correct?
Yeah, they're playing there away. It's a 3:30 Eastern time kickoff. So if we go to NCAAF and we go scores for the top 25, you're looking at tonight, Russell's beloved Memphis Tigers are playing Rice. Penn State and Ohio State have an early game.
Where did Rice end up? They used to be in the Southwest, right?
Yeah, these teams are in the American Conference. But yeah, Rice was a member of the old Southwest Conference once upon a time.
They never won anything, though, did they?
They were the Northwestern of that conference.
Well, then there was SMU. They had the one team that won good year, and then all of a sudden the thing blew up, right?
Well, it blew up because they were cheating their asses off.
But didn't it blow up because the team imploded and guys were bitching about the guys making more money than them?
That was a big part of it. There was a lot of jealousy. Sort of like the 85 Bears turning into the 86 Bears.
Allegedly who did that was Ditka. That was Ditka that did that, allegedly.
Well, he, as a leader, he was terrible. But yeah, he was as much a money-grubbing opportunist as anybody. So for him to in any way criticize others for doing it would seem as hypocritical.
Well, didn't Jimbo Colbert get a sponsorship, and Ditka told him he shouldn't do that, and then he ended up getting it?
I don't know.
Something like that. Something like that. Long ago. All right, go ahead.
There are some good early games on Saturday. Penn State and Ohio State. That's in Columbus, so I'd make it less likely to happen. But I always say there is nothing more dangerous than a talented underachiever.
What do you think? What is the status? Did they lose players? They have hurt players. I mean, how do you go from number two ranked to being horrible? I mean, they must still have some people, or are they all fled already?
No, they still have the people. It's just that once it starts to go bad, and there has to be more story about what was going on behind the scenes. Story that I sure don't know. LSU would be the same thing. What all was going on behind the scenes. Because clearly not everybody is on the same page. But you never know when you have an accumulation of talent like that where they're going to have the one day where everything clicks. So that's Ohio State has to be aware of that. Now, that's also a team that's ready to give up. So, you kick their butts in the first quarter and then the game's essentially over. Vanderbilt and Texas are playing at noon Eastern, playing the early game. So that's kind of interesting. It's in Austin. Miami, SMU. SMU's okay, but shouldn't be a threat to them. Trying to think of who else looks on here. They'll go to the later games. Indiana's playing, but they should beat Maryland. Georgia, Florida is interesting just because it's a rivalry game.
Well, Florida actually has a really good team. They also have the worst schedule ever in the history of college ball.
Well, they may, although I definitely remember the 88 and 89 Notre Dame schedules.
When I looked early in the year, Florida's playing like 8 or 9 games against teams that were ranked like in the top 15 or something. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, and that was the 88-89 Notre Dame schedule. So we have that. But again, rivalry game, so it could be interesting. We could be South Carolina, Ole Miss.
I've heard a few little thingies or read that are they booting Belichick out, trying to get him out?
Well, they may be.
What kind of deal does he have?
I would. Oklahoma, Tennessee is a pretty interesting game. It's in Knoxville too. Don't think it's a huge consequence, but it is a consequence. And I suppose Cincinnati and Utah, because Cincinnati's 7-1, Utah's 6-2. Cincinnati's got to be looking at every game as an elimination game from the playoffs for them. So,
Well, how good do you think BYU is? What conference are they in now?
They are in. That's a good question. Aren't they in the Big 12 now?
I think so. I'm not. The last couple of teams in the Pac-10 are still the Pac-10, right? They let other people in there or something.
Well, the Pac-10, the old Pac-10 or Pac-12 is just two teams this year. Then they've worked some stuff out with all other, a bunch of other West Coast teams to form a new conference.
It's starting next year?
Yeah, I believe it's starting next year. So, Brigham Young's off this week, but they're 9-0, they're 8-0. That's not bad. It's not easy to do.
No, I just wonder who the hell they played or whatever. They're not in a conference that's going to have a champion, I don't think.
So if you look at Brigham Young, they opened against Portland State. They beat Stanford, who's terrible. East Carolina. But then in Colorado, who's not very good. West Virginia, Arizona, Utah, they beat. And Utah's pretty good. Iowa State was supposed to be good. They beat them. They beat them pretty handily.
So Stanford now, they're in the ACC, right?
Yeah.
So now they're going to be flying their swim team in January to play against the Irish South Bend.
Well, or even their basketball team.
Yeah.
You don't worry about South Bend as much as you. They have to go all the way to Chapel Hill or some of those types of places too.
At least it's warm there, or warmer. We've known what South Bend can be in the wintertime. It's not really your. I remember when the hockey players used to go to, what was the place? Was it Michigan? Was the one right on the border of Lake Superior? Was it Michigan Tech or something?
Michigan Tech, yeah, up in Houghton.
those guys were, and they'd go up there by bus, didn't they? I think they did. Back in those days, they were not happy with the weekend.
I used to go to Houghton for work periodically, and you could fly in. Actually, you were flying into it was Houghton Hancock, but you could fly in. You either have to connect through Detroit or Minneapolis to do it.
Do you think they flew the hockey team in those days? I don't know if they did.
I don't know.
Oh God.
I don't know, but yeah, when you get up there, I mean, you know, when every other college is having their big spring festival, they're having a winter carnival in Houghton.
When do you think the government's going to start paying people? Is this weekend the charm or what?
I guess we'll see what happens when Snap misses a payment.
Well, they were talking in Illinois that, and I don't, you know, who knows on what side you're listening to, but they were talking about how it's very mean-spirited, they thought, because if the state or somebody wanted to put some money into the SNAP and cover it for the weekend, they essentially are shutting down the system. So you can't use the system to distribute the stuff. I never talk about that. Of course, I don't know enough about those systems to make a comment. Does that make any sense?
Well, the state doesn't have access to it.
I can talk to that.
All right.
Go ahead.
So basically what the issue is that while the program is administered by the states, the funding does not come from the states. Now, when you're shut down, when the government is locked up, then the IT people that are necessary to operate it aren't there. All right, so that's a problem. But there's another issue with a lot of this too, and it's not just this program, it's all the stuff that the states are involved in administering, and that is this: assuming that the CR is ultimately passed, and that is an assumption, all of the funding is retroactive to the appropriation going from September 30th, okay, so October 1, right, because September is the end of the fiscal. So if you are fronting the funds, the federal government's good for it, assuming the CR eventually passes, assuming. But if the CR never passes, then you'd eat it, because that never happens, right? So if for example, there is no CR at all, but the, you know, there's a new appropriation set of bills that pass, and they exclude that particular thing, or modify the amount, or, you know, whatever, there's less, all right, then that lesser amount would be what would be dispersed retroactive to October 1st. So what you're seeing here is a couple of things. First, there is an administrative problem for the states in that there is a very complex formula that goes into how this stuff's computed and how the funds get to the states. Right? It's not as simple as here's $2 billion. Okay.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. So that formula, if you were to play with it in one state and not another, I'm not so sure you could realistically do that. All right, now you got a judge who's claiming that, you know, they're gonna force these funds to be dispersed. You can issue all the orders you want. If the system is not able to handle this, then can't be done. Okay, and, you know, go ahead and issue all the orders you'd like. If I can't physically do something without damaging the integrity of the system, I'm going to refuse if I'm one of the people that's still working. And you can go ahead and try to jail me for that. But no. So yeah, this is real. But like I said, there's a bifurcated issue here, because what this is to a large degree saying with a lot of these programs is that within the states, there appears to be And within the banking system too, because why is it that, say, for example, the state of Illinois, the state of Illinois has extensive banking relationships. What, you're telling me that they have a problem with a 90-day swap line to cover things during the shutdown that they know are going to ultimately be paid? No, not assuming that they're ultimately going to be paid. So there appears to be at least some either political gamesmanship here in that regard, or there is a legitimate concern that CR is not going to pass at all.
I think there's a chance you won't see Congress again.
Well, if that, here's the thing, Chief. I mean, if this goes all the way, if this was to go all the way to the end of the fiscal, okay, all the way to next September, all right, then at that point, that money's never going to get paid. All right, and so in that situation, that's a problem for the state that funds it, right?
I'd like to see, everyone, which is never going to happen. Between all the sniping back and forth and the politics and this and that and who deserves what and whatever and whether you're left or right or crazy or whatever the hell you are, I think you need to, maybe I've gotten more like this since I've been doing the show, Carl, because I like to observe stuff I learn more from the different people that are on the show than I ever thought I could. But somewhere along the line here, everybody, open your eyes. Look at how many people here, and it's not just the people who don't want to work and sitting on a sidewalk. How many people in this country are now employed that can't afford food regularly and can't afford rent regularly?
Yeah.
It's dramatic. I mean, we're not talking about everybody who is a food stamp, whatever you want to call it now, SNAP program. I guess I'll show my age and call it food stamp. That everybody who has food stamps is some slump sitting on the corner drinking beer. It's not the case. I mean, there's some of that, obviously. But it is, when you look at these numbers and these food pantries and these people that constantly are, there's the church behind me on the north side. Every Saturday morning, there's a big long line and they have like a food giveaway.
Yeah,
I'm gonna bet you that 80% of the people in line there are either
they have jobs
or Social Security recipients.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Chief. We will not deal with the largest driver of this. Okay, and we go back and forth on the show all the time about this, right? And that is this crap in the medical system.
Oh, without a doubt.
All right, there was just an article out in the last couple of days about a woman who's a physician. She gets in a car accident. It's not her fault. She gets T-boned. Okay, she's got a green light. The other guy's got a red and runs it and hits her. Right, breaks her ankle. All right, not a you're gonna die injury, but a you got to have it fixed now injury. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Gets taken to the hospital. They fix it. They send she's got insurance because she's a physician. They send the bill to the insurance company. They code it some way that the insurance company doesn't like, and all of a sudden she's got a bill staring at her for $70,000.
Yep.
Okay. Now here's the problem. It's not when this thing ultimately it gets resolved, and if you read all the way through the article, you find out that it gets resolved. The insurance company ultimately paid 20. Now that's a felony.
Yeah. Well.
All right. Well, guess what?
You're not going to get any. We're never going to. Let's put it this way. What I'm trying to do, Carl, is I'm not as far down that. I am as far down the line as you are, but I think there needs to be somewhat of a realization. I have a friend who's pretty much just on Social Security, right? And he has a full number. Now, the guy's paranoid about not getting some kind of a hospital bill, right? Because he can't afford it. And I rant and rave about the stupidity of the CPI. And I'm trying to, on the early edge of where Carl is, we're on the same subject, but we're talking about 6.5% of your CPI basket. Now, this gentleman, and we just went through his stuff with him, his Social Security is $2,600 a month or something. Now, it should be $2,900 because out of that it's He's already paying, what, $200 for the Medicare A. That's coming out of...
That comes out of his...
So it comes out of his that, so...
Well, B comes out of his check.
Oh, yeah, B comes out of the check. So he's paying... Right. So he's got that coming out. That's $200 or something?
It depends on his income, but assuming it's just Social Security, yeah, it would be about $200.
Yeah, $200. Well, I mean, that's... As a matter of fact, next year the Social Security is going to go up 2.8% or 2.7%. I'll bet the medical part's going to go up 4.5%.
Well, B, my understanding is that the adjustment that's coming is essentially going to eat all of that from B, yeah.
Yeah, okay, my number is, for this gentleman, I think, is say 200, we'll round it off. Well, he's got one of the supplemental policies, he's got one of the F, which doesn't cover dental and the other stuff, but it covers just about everything, so that's why he's got it.
Right.
So that's 335. All right, so now we're up to 535. Medical, or the prescription parts, another $70, so we're up to $600.
Right.
In order to have a doctor, you got to, you know, if you got to be one of these concierge people, if you want your own doctor, well, that's another $300 a month. Just to have somebody you can call. Otherwise, you have no doctor. I mean, most people have no doctor. They can walk into one of those urgent care facilities, but they actually don't have somebody to call. That's gone the way of the dodo bird for just about everybody. So the dude's out of pocket $1,000 a month out of $2,600. Right. That leaves him $1,600. Or how exactly do you live and do you eat on $1,600 a month? I don't care if you live in rural Mississippi, you can't do that.
Well, Chief, look, well, you don't, okay? Yeah. But here's the thing, all right? You look at what's, what everyone's screaming about with, like, what was going on before the changes in the, that were put in with Biden during the pandemic with the additional subsidies, okay? And where they're going to go back to. All right, for next year, right? For someone like me, all right, healthy, nothing going on, blood pressure's normal, glucose response is normal, I'm not overweight, I take no prescription medications, all right? Everything's fine. Okay, you want me to pay for the cheapest, crappiest plan that I can get on the exchange, almost $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
And if I make a dollar more than $40,000, I get no subsidy. Whatever.
I thought it was 50, but it's there somewhere.
Well, it's in that range,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But if I make a dollar more, then now this is what it used to be. Now, as it with the Biden adjustments, the premiums are capped at 8% of your AGI. Okay, I think it's 8.5. But it's around 8% of your AGI. So that was essentially what the change was that if I had this $12,000 a year premium, all right, if that was more than 8.5% of my AGI after my standard deduction, everything else, if it was more than 8.5% of my AGI, the subsidy covered the rest. The problem with that entire model is the same thing that happened when the federal government federalized all the college student loans. As soon as you can do this, the price goes to the moon.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Because now I have zero sensitivity to it. And guess what? It's now in your grocery bill, Chief. Because where do you think the inflation goes? It goes into everybody, right? So essentially, you're sticking a gun in the face of everybody else in the country.
There is no inflation. Your president told you that.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay,
By
the way, the pork butts that are in my freezer say otherwise.
Well, but the other part about the Medicare piece is this is 35% of this dude's basket.
And, right.
But then, now when he goes to the hospital, which he showed me some of his bills, when he goes to the hospital, Medicare pays probably 25% of what everybody else pays.
Here's the thing.
What I'm saying, in other words, that's how much it costs him to pay 25% of what other people are paying, which is even more bizarre. People don't necessarily realize. What I'm trying to do is from a base level explain what you're saying, how out of control it really is.
Oh, yeah. No, as I've said.
I always try to look at I always do that, Carl. I always look at the actual bottom base and work up. I don't know why I was ever taught that. Everybody else looks at the big numbers and works down. I mean, I go the opposite way.
Well, that's probably because you did cost accounting. Duh.
Yeah.
Like everybody that's ever actually run a business or been involved in having to do accounting, right? But Here's the thing, that, you know, I have said for a long time, all the way back in the 1980s, says you stop this, the cost, the actual cost is going to come down by 80%. And people look at me like I got six heads, right? And I said, no, seriously, it will. And the reason is that you got a nice hospital over here, and next door to it is an entire second building full of people whose only job is to screw you out of the money.
Well, it's, that, it's a process of paper back and forth.
Well, but that's what, so yeah, to screw yeah. you out of the money. Okay, now in the 1970s, there was a girl behind the counter at the checkout that handed you a bill.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and there were two or three of them, right? There wasn't an entire staff of people. Now, you fix it, and the reason the politicians don't want to touch this is not only is everybody making a ton of money, but all the people in that building are unemployed.
Well, you know, it's going to end up happening, Carl, because nobody else can afford it.
Well, that's exactly yeah. right. And the thing is that, you know, people like myself, if you think I'm going to go out there and work and then at the same time do this, at the same time post up that kind of cash for absolutely nothing, and then, oh, by the way, if anything goes wrong, I'm into them for another $7,500 before they pay a penny.
Yeah. Well, right? It's
because that's a deductible.
It's absolutely absurd.
Right. So what are the odds that me, as a healthy individual, is going to need $17,000 worth of medical care in the next 12 months?
Careful with that.
Well, no, I understand. All right, but here's the thing. So if something catastrophic happens, the doc turns around and, you know, I got this pain down, you know, in the wrong part of the body, and I go and I look, he says, you know, hey, jackass, you got cancer.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, and he says something like that. All right, how about, since we're living in an amoral country where people think it's perfectly fine to screw me out of five times what something should cost, they think that's a perfectly good business model. Nothing
sure
wrong
is,
with it.
Sure is.
It's illegal. It's been illegal for over 100 years. It's a felony, and yet nobody will bring a single charge. Okay? Therefore, it continues to go on. Okay, fine. If we're living in that kind of a world, and that's the world we're in, then why doesn't a decent subset of the American people stand up and say, okay, we're not going to play your game. We're not going to pay the premium. We're not going to pay the deductibles. If something happens, you're going to charge us going to charge us the one-fifth price. And if you don't, and you try to do this, we're going to pay just as much attention to all the different laws. We're going to take retribution. And by the way, You should figure out, because you have an IQ greater than your shoe size, that telling somebody that you're going to prosecute them when they've got a terminal condition is a waste
of
time.
You're not going to, you know, prosecute when people don't even. There's two things here that I think that you, my mother used to use the term brainwash. We brainwash the population is since the insurance is deductible to the firm. Most firms pay for your stuff, especially if you're if you work for the city or the county or something.
Well, it's not insurance, but yes.
It's, well, somebody's paying for it.
Well, I understand that, but insurance, you cannot write insurance on a car that you already wrecked.
I understand, but what I'm saying is somebody's probably done it. But
they probably went to jail for it, too.
People don't equate when somebody goes into the hospital and the bill is $50,000. They will tell you how much they paid. Oh man, I got to pay four or five. The whole thing is mentally. We've made brain salad out of people's minds when it comes to this.
Yeah.
I mean, and one of the reasons is if you walk into a place and say, you interview and you go, Carl, you know, you're a pretty smart guy. We're going to pay you $200,000 a year, and we'll take care of all your insurance. If you say, well, wait a minute, my wife's a teacher or a judge or something or a police lady,
I've already got it.
The guy doesn't just say, okay, we'll make that $225, which he ought to.
Well, yeah, you ought to.
But nobody does. So
I know.
So we've got this idea that somehow or another this isn't really us, and so it's not in your. I'll tell you, when it first came home to roost for me is my brother, and we used to work with Bob Cerrone when he was still in the business. we had a bunch of people working for PTI. We got into what do they used to call it, where you because we had to talk about the worst thing, Carl. We had like three or four ladies of childbearing age.
Oh yeah,
and three or four guys that were older. So we couldn't have the worst salad. To go to the insurance company.
Trust me, as a guy who used to write the checks, I know all about that one.
So we ended up hooking on with Empower because everybody gets, you get in the same pool, right? So you essentially became like a half-assed Empower employee, even though we paid for everything, right? I mean, some of your human resources firms will do that. Okay, so we get in there, and we got this HSA plan. Now, there's two kinds. One is what you kind of lose it at the end of the year, but one is it's actually like an IRA. So
it's an account, and you can actually invest it too.
So we get this thing, and just like you said, there I was, healthy as a horse, never had to see anybody, playing ball every day, not a bit overweight, running all the time, and all of a sudden I got like $15,000 in this thing. I'm going, hey, this is going to be better than my IRA, right? And next year, I don't know, I did something. There was a spot of blood someplace it wasn't supposed to be, so I got an MRI for that. And then I got everything was now become a $5,000 deductible that you had to pay.
Right.
So it was that, and I messed up my knee playing softball or something. But thankfully there was nothing wrong with that either. So I ended up with two blanks, thank God. And Carl, every one, my doctor sent me to the specialist who sent me for the ARI. MRI, both of them, the specialist and the MRI, were like $4,900. During the year, nothing was wrong with me. I had three tests. My thing was broke. I spent $15,000, and the insurance company never paid a dime. I'm thinking, these guys are geniuses.
Well, they stole it, because here's the thing. Here's the reality of it, okay, is that if you'd gotten in your car, assuming you were still able to do that, right? I mean, this doesn't work if you just got in a bad car accident or you just got shot. But if you got in your car, you probably could have had that MRI done for $500, including the
This is 20 years ago. If you were Northwestern, that's where you went. Now there's places you can call up and say, I hurt my elbow. They'll say, come on in for $250. They'll give you an MRI of your elbow, and you don't even need a doctor's prescription.
Well, that's exactly my point. Yeah. Okay. Well, guess what? 20 years ago, all right, when I started, making a huge stink about this stuff, the guys in Japan invented the MRI. All right, they're the people who figured out how to do that. You could get on a plane, go over to Tokyo, walk in for $100 cash, a hundo in U.S. money. They'd run the test, scan you, and read it. Okay. And so essentially the way this ended up being was that you could go over there to Tokyo, have a nice little vacation, okay, get back on a plane, come home for less money than they wanted to charge you in the U.S.
Well, but now I know that they're around. I'll be a very short part of this story, but a young lady who works downstairs in the bar, the interesting group down there, because they all have different jobs, so you get to learn about their other life. They all play one night a week at the bar. And she had some kind of issue with her... She always had, when you see one eye's off a little bit, it's off to the side, hair, there's a name for that. And when you're a little kid, if that happens, they try and do is strengthen that eye and put a patch on the other one, so you're whatever. There's a way, and then there's a surgery if you have to have it. Usually it's a muscular thing. But hers was getting worse, and all of a sudden she's gone for like a couple of weeks or 3 weeks, and turns out that she went online, she went to a couple of neurosurgeons, and everybody's like, we don't really want that. She went online, it turns out there's something wrong with a nerve that's connected to your face. It's back in your head.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's a serious deal. So finally she finds somebody here. They do the big the scans and all that stuff, and they find out, here's the nerve, and we have to relieve the pressure on this nerve. We essentially got to drill into her head behind her ear.
Oh, I think you told me about this.
Yeah, and so they go through the deal, and the guy says, well, you're all fixed, and it was like $100,000 or $100,000 and a quarter. And so she's not getting any better. And now they don't want to do another MRI or scan because it might show that they screwed up. Anyway, back online she goes. She finds some guy in Japan that is essentially, allegedly the best in the world on this. I mean, I wouldn't know how to do this at all, find this kind of stuff. And she decides she's going to go over there. And now he says, just come on over. We'll do the tests here. So she and her mother fly over. And the guy takes her in there to give all the scans. And he says, oh, yeah, well, they release the pressure on the wrong nerve.
Right.
Or something. So next day she has it done, walks out of the hospital that night. Guy said she couldn't fly for 2 weeks, so she and her mom toured all over to Japan and got to know her mom more and said we hadn't reconnected like that in years. She's got two big scars on her head, and it was $10,000.
Right, right.
I mean, this is insanity, and yet we continue to have bigger. One of my guys had some heart issue, and I went to go see him in rehab over here at Northwestern.
Yeah.
The floor you get off on, Carl, is there's a desk in the middle, there's two tables. The room's got to be 180 feet by 150 feet, and there's five people on it.
Yeah.
In downtown Chicago, I'm going, for God's sake, what are we doing here? There's no patients here.
Well, you know, one of the things that I find completely fascinating is that just before Obamacare came in, a place called the Surgical Center of Oklahoma opened up.
Yeah, I've heard about those guys.
Okay, now they take no insurance, right? Totally cash. You can go on their website and you get a soup to nuts price, including the anesthesia, you know, whatever. All right, the whole deal.
How do you describe it yourself to them unless some doctor does it for
well,
you?
Well, you'd have to know what you need done.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So I mean, there's that. Right. But you know, let's say that you have a hernia and you need the hernia repaired. Okay. Well, this is the price for the hernia repair. Now, here's the thing. That is a soup to nuts price, including if they screw up and give you an infection in the hospital. All right.
Is it a hospital or just a surgical center?
Well, it's a surgical center, but if they screw up, they eat it.
But I mean, do they have the capability of keeping you there for 3-4 days if they have to?
If they had to, right?
Okay.
Now here's the thing. Their complication rate is a tiny fraction of anyone else's. Gee, I wonder why.
Well, the reason why when you said cash. Got here, got a couple minutes of break, but sometimes you can. I honestly do believe you learn from individual stories, because otherwise you have no idea how it affects people. Right. Was it doing the building here? He's like the building engineer, real good friend of mine, and he has a hernia. And he says to me, he always calls me a big guy. Well, big guy, what should I do with this? Here's my prices. There's a place, a surgical center, I don't think it was the one in Oklahoma, that does, it's $2,500 or $3,000 or something like that. And he goes, but now if I go to this hospital or a doctor wants me to go, it's like $7,000 or $6,000, but my deductible is like $5,000 or $4,000 or something.
Right.
And I went through the numbers. And you know what, Carl? I couldn't tell him what to do, because I said the guy's name Salvador. Salvador, if it was December and you hadn't used any of your deductible,
right,
I would say go pay the $2,500 tomorrow. I mean, it's an easy call.
But the problem is that what happens if something else occurs? And
his son's a prolific soccer player. I said, wait a minute. Now, if the son, you know, wrecks an ankle or does something, either he goes in and gets an MRI, now you haven't paid your deductible, now you're screwed. So he ended up, I said, I think you're probably better off paying the deductible. And I couldn't. You know how much it hurt me to say that, but it was almost a toss-up. It was actually a toss-up.
Yeah,
if it had been June or July, I might have said take the chance. But February, I'm like, man, I don't know if you can take that chance.
But Chief, understand this: the fact that that's where the analysis lay, right? For a guy that actually knows how to do cost analysis,
yeah.
Right? And you are one, right? Okay, the fact that that's where it is, that's not an accident.
Oh God, no, it's absolutely not.
And by the way, that right there is all the evidence you need if we actually enforce the law to throw people in jail. Because the entire design of a system like that is extortion.
Without a doubt, extortion's a crime. Yeah.
Extortion is a felony, for Christ's sakes. And then when you talk about a whole bunch of people getting together doing it, we have a word for that. We have used that law against the mob, but it doesn't just apply to the mob. It's called racketeering.
Yeah, without a doubt.
By the way, that's a go to jail, don't ever come out offense.
Well, what do you think? The Googles, the world, and all these people do all day long on this stuff. We got to go. But you know what? It's interesting. We've talked on the show. We got to go break here in a minute, but we've talked on the show a lot about, and I really, when you know we get somebody who's a pure, you know, say holier than thou kind of guy, just do this to these people, blah blah blah, and they talk about, and even like even you've mentioned that Clinton did some of the same thing about booting people off.
Oh, we did. Well, actually, Clinton did more of it than the big bag of barf did.
What I'm saying is, I really, it's not just, you know, looking through the back window and seeing the sunset. I think the difference now is so dramatic with the drugs and everything. The drugs now are much more debilitating than they were back then. I mean, people now, I saw some guy downstairs in the alley. I walked out of work the other night. African-American guy. He couldn't have been 110 pounds. The dude looked like he was 60, and I'll bet he was 30. Leaning up against the wall, could barely stand. I'm going, this dude is not able to work anywhere tomorrow. At the end of the blue line here, I mean, it seems like I'm skipping, but I'm not. One of the L lines here, L or Rapid Transit, whatever you call it, it ends up in Forest Park.
Yeah, I know where it is.
And there's a lot of people that just take the train and never get off, right?
Right.
And the guy, the mayor of Forest Park, comes on there and he starts talking. Now, the guy has some sense, and you know, I don't know where he's getting the money or where he thinks, but at least he has some semblance of the problem. He said, you know, it's so bad. He goes, we need an ambulance stationed at the end of this station.
Right.
We need to go through the train. We need an urgent care facility half a block away. He goes, every train, there's four or five people that need to be in that urgent care facility is to find out what's wrong with them, you know, how old they are, what they're doing, do they have any of this, do they have any place. He goes, we need to step this up instead of just putting them back on the train and sending them to O'Hare. He goes,
Chief, I was going to say, you know, when I lived in Chicago, and, you know, as you know, I did for like 13 years, right, there was a large part of that time that I was working for other people, not just running my own show, all right? And during that time, I lived in Wrigleyville for part of it, and guess what I used to get to work, okay? The train,
yeah.
Right? Because it was, you know, it was around the corner, literally, was the station. And the thing is, then, you know, when I had to travel for business, I had to fly. I'd get on the train, and I'd, you know, change trains and take it out to O'Hare. Right, every single time that I got on or off that train in O'Hare, and this was, you know, we're talking about the late 80s, early 90s here, there was somebody who was stoned out of their effing gourd to the point that, you know, they're basically drooling out their mouth on that train. Right now, you know, today there's probably five of them.
Oh, easy. There's people that have nowhere else to go.
Right, but these people were almost certainly homeless. They were trashed, and who knows how many of them were, you know, one heartbeat away from their heart stopping because they were full of full of opiates, and I'm like, good God.
Well, this crystal meth and this other stuff is way worse than the opioids in terms of what it does.
And the thing is that, unfortunately, because I had people in my family that, you know, that basically if you could get high on it, they'd use it. The problem that you run into with the synthetic stuff that they have now, you know, the fentanyl and this kind of stuff, is that the amount you need to get stoned on opioids goes up, but the amount that you need for it to depress your respiration to the point that it kills you does not.
Yeah.
So what these guys end up doing...
Oh, that's what happened to Belushi and all those guys.
Right. Well, but they mix it with meth. And the reason they mix it with the speed is because the speed counteracts that second effect.
SP futures up 56, NASDAQ futures up 3. We're making back pretty much everything we lost yesterday. Two of the big stocks down yesterday, two of the big stocks up today. We're right back. We started from by the dip yet again. We'll talk about that when we come back. right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Ricky on the board. Carl Denninger with us on the Zoom. S&P futures up 58, and NASDAQ futures up 374. That's because Amazon's up 29. That's 13%. If we had Meta was down 15% yesterday, so that's what caused us to go the other way yesterday. NVIDIA up another $4. I mean, they're all in the world here. Just as a way of review, say yesterday the SPOOs were down 68. Now they're up 58. The S&Ps or NASDAQ was down 377, and now it's up 376. Gee. I'm stunned at that. It's the exact same amount. Buy the dip. Dow futures only up 123 because none of these stocks are in. Well, I guess Amazon is in the Dow. So that's. I've got more stocks down in the Dow today than up. Yet Amazon is up 29, Apple up 7, and Microsoft up 4, and Nvidia up 4. So take those stocks out. Chevron's up a little bit too. Everything else in the Dow is down. So that's we're seeing this. Incredibly bifurcated market here yet again. I don't know where that all ends, but maybe it doesn't end. Who knows? Maybe it never ends. That's a possibility too. DAX down 62.2, but they're not feeling the Kool-Aid over here. FTSE down 22.2, so down a little bit, nothing much. CAC ran down 12.1, so boringly down over there. Nikkei up 1,000 points, 2%. They're not down. We got a deal with them. A deal. Hang Seng down 376. That's 1.5%. And mainland China, Shanghai is down 32.8%. So Japan up and China down. South Korea is also up. Oil down 17 cents, 60.40. Now it's stuck on 60 like it used to be stuck on 63. Brent down a dime, 64.94. Gold, it's up $16, 4,032. So I won't say comfortably over 4,000, but at least a little over 4,000. Silver up 70 cents, 48.69. Foreign exchange. The euro is 115.5, so the dollar's gotten a lot stronger than a few weeks ago when it was 117. British pound, 131. Again, the dollar's a lot stronger versus the pound. The yen is 154, so this is the other way. That's yen per dollar. It's not the other way as it is on the pound and on the euro. I don't know why they do that, but they do. Crypto is up $3,400, big bounce up to 110. Everybody's happy this morning. We have for us Trevi Weather Sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:37 here in Chicago, 43 degrees right now with a high of 55. Sunny to partly cloudy today. A jacket may come in handy for trick-or-treating. Tonight, a shower in spots, otherwise partly cloudy with a low of 41 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 63 degrees right now with a high of 89, partly sunny and warm. Tonight, clear and dry with a low of 60 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Emma Kennedy from Monroe, 16 minutes. Edens from Lane Cook, 29 minutes. We're looking at 25 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf. Dan Ryan from 95th, 46 minutes, and Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 38 minutes. World Series Game 6 is tonight at 8 p.m. Blue Jays leading the series against Dodgers 3-2. For the NBA, we got Knicks at Bulls at 8 p.m. today and Jazz at Suns at 10 p.m. And lastly, Ravens beat Dolphins yesterday 28-6. And this Sunday, November 2, we got Bears at Bengals at 1 p.m. Back to you guys.
What a Bengals must really suck if the Bears are favored. Just saying.
Well, you know, it's yeah. all I can say is that those are definitely not grizzly bears.
No, it's I'm looking at the stuff we talked about. It's kind of a week in review here. By the way, Carl, how did you? I don't know if you had a chance to listen. What'd you think of Bill Moriarty's hour the other day?
I did not hear it.
Because you were the theme actually.
Oh well, all right. I've been on the road on and off, and
on the road again.
I wasn't at the computer, and as a result,
Are you going to listen to a Bohemian Rhapsody today? 50 years to the day.
Well, you know, might have to do that.
Yeah. The anyway, but I started it off, and not to repeat for everybody to listen, but I said, you know, Bill has been involved in civil engineer. He started out being on surveying teams in Schaumburg when Schaumburg was just cornfields.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the line, he wandered over into water treatment. And so I said, you know, Carl has been talking about, and, you know, we have a president that just signed an executive order. You know, we want 15 atomic energy plants tomorrow and, you know,
right.
all kinds of crap. I said, no, not only have none are under construction right now. And he said, well, there's people
right.
around the world that I said, but what Carl's talking about is, and I didn't know whether you had two or three kind of competing new designs going forward. And I said, okay, Bill, now somebody wants a water treatment plant, and I guess you could pull one off the shelf, but then you got three people saying, wait a minute, we got a new design that's like better or not.
Right.
He said, well, in that business, what you could do, he says, you can actually put up a prove me out kind of facility. You might be able to put up four or five trailers somewhere and try all the new stuff in the trailers and see how it pans out before you decide to make it into a bigger plant. And even then, it might be a smaller plant some way and then somewhere bigger. He goes, it does complicate the process or extend it out, because if there are other designs that might be good, you don't want to ignore them.
Well, you don't know which one
but you don't
work
know
which ones won't.
So you end up having to do some kind of a smaller facility to see if it works. He's in water, because it's somewhat easier, because you can downsize the machines and do them in a trailer and see where you get. He said, but even so, he goes, every water area, the chemistry of all the water you're taking in,
it's different.
It's different. He goes, some you have to soften, some you don't. He goes, like Lake Michigan water is pretty easy because you don't have to soften it. You know, that those kinds of things. He says, plus if they have certain minerals in there, if you got to take some out, and sometimes you got to put some back in. He said, now everybody's using this membrane as the new system. He goes, but the membranes take everything out. You got to put everything back in. He says, so, but he says it's a process of how much land do you need? What do you think your growth pattern is? Because if, you know, the growth pattern, if you got a city of 100,000 people, well, you at least want enough land to be able to expand the place to where if it's 250,000 people 15 years from now, you don't have to go find more land. Because there's an amazing amount to the process. And he goes, yeah, by the way, he said, I've listened to Carl. He's right. There's two different, he goes, we're not talking about a two-year game here. I mean, it's a 10-year lead for a water treatment plant. He goes, atomic energy. But he said, it's interesting just to hear somebody sort of like me with the cost accounting. Wait a minute. Let's figure out, here's dollar one. How do we work it up the chain? It was really refreshing about the different people that are involved and the and where you have to go and the site management. And he goes, and then you have to get everybody on board if it's a desalination plant. He goes, the one in Corpus Christi, they ended up basically bleep canning because it kept getting more and more expensive. And they finally told all the developers, you're not coming here. We don't have water.
Right.
He says,
right.
There's times where people just say we can't do it, you know, type of thing, and which I was really surprised about. But it was really fascinating. I mean, I don't want to miss Carl and Larissa, Russell and Larissa. But I thought you might want to take a listen, because it's talks like you, only like an engineer type of thing.
yeah. Well, I mean, it's one of the things that you know, within this context, the kind of the challenge is that there is very significant lead time, of course, between, you know, just because of the scale of the plant, right? Of I want one and it's online.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now that's true for any kind of large scale industrial facility. I don't care what it is. You can't put up an auto assembly plant in 2 weeks. That's not happening either,
yeah.
Right? So. And when it comes to nuclear power and power generation in particular, there's a secondary issue that comes up, which is that every single green organization on the planet sues you the second you say you're going to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. And so and we have a broken system in this country of dealing with this kind of thing. And one of the ways to stop it is to require performance bonds Which, by the way, under the rules of federal procedure, I've talked
about. By the way, they always required performance bond on rail car contracts. Pullman always had to get one.
Well, here's the thing. So if you read through the rules of federal civil procedure, okay, which of course govern any lawsuit you file in federal court. Now, this is not true in the state courts, but it is in the Illinois in particular doesn't have a mandatory requirement for it. And I know about this because, of course, I used to run a business in Illinois. Some states do, but most don't. But at the federal level, it is in the rules of federal civil procedure that if you are looking for injunctive relief, if you're trying to stop somebody from doing something while a case plays out, and this, by the way, has not been enforced on either side. So when Obama was doing things, when Biden was doing things, and someone, you know, states or someone wanted to sue to prevent it, and, you know, same thing now, Trump's doing something, they want to stop him from doing it. If you are not the federal government, it does apply to states, does not apply to the federal government. If you are not the federal government and you bring a suit and ask for an injunction or a TRO, you must, it's not an option, you must post a performance bond to guarantee that if you lose...
We don't want to give the government any more power than they have.
Well, look, this is already in there, Chief. This is not... So
Bill was taking the idea... And I always go back to the Alaska
pipeline. No, what I'm saying is, look, if we're going to build infrastructure, and we have to, all right? I mean, this is not...
But the people, you can't just go by... You know, we just spent the first half hour of the show talking about the morals of IBM doing this crap for China.
Yeah.
You can't just go by the morals of the businessman. I mean, you can't. I mean, a lot of old white guys want to do that, but let's. I'm not accusing you of that. But look at the Alaskan pipeline. I mean, the Alaskan pipeline ended up being a pretty big success for all people who were involved. It doesn't look anything like the original thing on the table, where there was no concern whatsoever for any animal or anything like that.
I understand that. Okay, and
you can do both. I mean,
I'm not arguing you can't.
Yeah.
I'm saying that if you sue and lose, you should have to.
Okay, but what he was talking about is if you have a desalination plant, the problem is what do you do with all the really salty?
What do you do with the brine?
He goes, okay, well you can't just if you're Corpus Christi. You can't just dump it. I think it's Corpus Christi. You can't just dump it in Galveston Bay. You're going to put every fisherman out of business.
Right.
He says so.
Well,
okay.
You're going to kill every fish in the bay.
Yeah. So the idea is okay. Now we have to come to some kind of conclusion. Do we need to go out 5 miles, 6 miles, depending on the current?
How long's the pipe? Right.
Because now if it's in New York, maybe you can go out 2 miles and there's a big current there and it's long gone and you don't have to worry about it. You know. But
right.
These things have to be fought out because the fisherman has some rights. You know, it's sort of the fish, for God's sake. I mean,
well, and again, one of the reasons that, you know, that China doesn't have any problem with putting up, you know, 100 new coal-fired power plants is that, and this is one of the reasons that we've got a serious trade problem with them and with India, by the way, for the same reason, because India's doing the same thing, is that they don't give a rat's ass about emissions. Okay, they don't care what they do with the fly ash that's generated by the plant. By the way, the fly ash is full of very useful nuclear fuel, which is why, you know, back when I wrote Leverage, I had, you know, the energy proposal to deal with the coal problem from the standpoint of that, but also provide power, all right, provide nuclear-driven power and synfuel, which solves all the problems at once. Now, is it free? Of course it's not free.
Nothing's free.
But it's an answer that takes all of these negatives from this, that, and the other thing and finds a way to use them in an economically viable and rational fashion, which is what you need to do ultimately if you're going to
be
competitive.
Everybody in the room at least has to have, in Bill's case, the idea is, okay, We do need more water. I mean,
right.
but if you get some people that say we don't want any more, I guess you could go on that road. We don't need any new developments. We don't need an AI plant here. facility that's going to take 50% of our water, and all of a sudden have to wreck the bay for those guys. I mean, that is a point of view, actually.
Well, and it's a valid one.
Yeah.
All right, so we just had Meta report a couple of days ago, right?
Yeah.
And they got shellacked. All right, they had a $6 estimate out on the street that came in.
They're down 76. They're up 5. Buy the dip.
Well, all right, but look. This is one of the companies, and you know, I circulated an article on this a few days ago. They are one of the firms that is putting together one of these data centers with a JV group that is, you know, joint venture, where they have essentially constructed a synthetic lease. Now, I didn't know about this until an article was sent to me that went through some of this, you know, what they were doing.
Yeah, you sent that to me. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, how this had been constructed. All right.
Can you give a Cliff Notes version of that doesn't destroy everybody's brain? But
okay, so let's say that I need a whole crap ton of space, very specialized space to put in an AI data center. It's very specialized space because it needs water, power, cooling.
Are we talking half a square mile, quarter square mile? What are we?
You're talking a monster facility that's going to cost $20 billion.
So okay? Maybe a square mile.
Yeah, I mean, large.
Yeah,
okay, including
well, square miles large. I mean, it's larger. I mean,
but you got the site, you got the building, you've got the power, you got the water, and by the way, when you're done with this, it is really not going to be suitable for general warehouse use, for example. Okay, if for some reason you don't need it for a data center, because the construction of the building it's a specialized device, it's a specialized thing. All right. Now, could you use it for some other kind of data center? Yeah, probably. But you probably couldn't use it as, for example, an Amazon warehouse.
Okay? Yeah, yeah.
It's not going to be suitable for that. All right, so you have this construction, and it's going to be extremely expensive to do. Now, if you are a large company like Meta, you have $70 billion on your balance sheet, cash, all right, and this thing's going to cost $30. And you also have an excellent investment grade credit rating in the market, which they do. This is your data center. You could go and internally finance this. You could either just pay for it.
No. You got to get some leverage.
Well, no, wait a minute. You could just pay for it. I mean, that's an option, right? The other option is you could go into the market and you could issue bonds. All right.
If you put your dough up and the thing is going to return 10% a year, that might be okay, but not to those guys. If you put somebody else's dough up and you're paying 5% and returns 10, your return could be 20.
Well, that's right. So here's
if it works out.
So they do this JV thing. All right. Now here's the problem. Now that's fine because now somebody else can make some money too, right? All right.
Yeah.
Because they get a lease. Okay. Here's the problem with it. In that transaction is it has a 4-year commitment and then is renewable on an option basis. Now that's very common in commercial leases. I had it when I had my space downtown. I had an initial 5-year term and the right to extend. Okay, not an obligation, but the right. Okay, and there's usually an escalator clause in there because, hey, guess what? You know, cost of operating goes up and da 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 da. Okay, fine. The problem is this. There's a residual value guarantee that Meta's on the hook for that's not on their books. So if they walk away after the 4 years, they're going to have to pay a cash payment for whatever
So the 4 years doesn't begin to cut into the guy who actually put the things up cost. So he can't be left holding the bag after 4 years.
Well, let's say, for example, after 4 years, this thing is only worth 10 cents on the dollar. Because it's a specialized facility.
It's like leasing
AI has blown up. And AI is blown up in everyone's face.
It's like leasing a $100,000 truck. That if you use it for 4 years and you only paid off 20, well, you better pay the guy the other 80, or what's he going to do?
Well, right. So basically, so the problem is the JV guys, they wouldn't have done this deal without this residual value guarantee on there. The problem with this is from an investment point of view and from your point of view, and from everybody else's point of view, is that nowhere is the value of this, could be, you know, $30 billion, that's sitting out there. That's not on Meta's balance sheet, but that is a real liability.
It's got to be a footnote somewhere, doesn't it?
It's not on the balance sheet. This is the same kind of off-balance sheet financing crap that was going on in 06.
Hey, we have five. I've been hoping for you to talk to you and not forget, like I normally do. All those cloud centers, and we're talking about these AI centers and all the power.
Yep.
And all those cloud centers, I remember one, Microsoft had, what, 20 planned or something? And the first one was going to be here, and I'm going to back of my brain here, Schaumburg or someplace, Mount Prospect, and it was going to use 40% of the power of the place, and they were, but this was kind of when we were starting the show, Carl, and
right.
All of a sudden they canceled all the other ones because the cloud ended up being, like you always say, faster and cheaper. Did they even finish the one in Schaumburg, or did that one? I guess my question is: are these AI centers going to go the way of the cloud centers? Never even need them.
You know, there's two basic problems. That's one of them. Okay, and yeah, there's this, the stranded capital issue is very real in a situation like that, right?
Well, do you know if they even finished the one in Schaumburg? The one I'm talking about?
I don't know.
You know what I'm talking about? It was.
No, I know exactly where it was supposed to go, but I don't know whether or not it was ever finished. I never followed it.
But all the other ones were canceled, right? That was going to be the
first. They killed the other ones. But the thing is that this the basic issue that you have, I mean, when it's in the AI thing is exponentially more subject to this than the cloud thing. You just saw two really serious disruptions in the cloud space in the last few days. All right. The problem with these kinds of infrastructure builds is that they're extraordinarily sensitive to relatively small things, which could be errors, they could be deliberate action by somebody who doesn't like you very much, you know, like another country. There's all sorts of ways they can go wrong. AWS had one of these, and I was actually kind of surprised that Amazon got the kind of stock reaction they did after taking a nearly day-long outage.
It's up $30. We don't care. Buy the dip.
Yeah, okay. By the way, both of these companies, and then, you know, Microsoft with Azure had another one yesterday, or 2 days ago, which was almost as bad, and in fact, in some ways worse. And I saw some disruptions and some stuff that I try to do with various, you know, organizations. All of a sudden, you know, apps on my phone aren't working and things like this. And the problem with AI is that in the general sense, now if you confine it to your business, for example, Amazon has products on their site, you're on their app, you buy something, and their AI analyzes your purchasing patterns and recommends other things to you. That's a closed system. I don't think there's any question that kind of thing is useful. They have already been doing it with various other database technologies. All you're doing is you know, a better, faster sieve. There's no real problem there. There's value there. That value is real. But it's 5% of what these guys are saying AI is going to be able to do. The problem with it is that if you get even a small amount of crap that gets ingested into these models, it collapses the veracity. It's exponential. And what's happening now is that all of these models are emitting this stuff where the public can see it, which means that the next model ingests it as part of its training data.
Okay. So,
now, there isn't any way to stop that because you're talking about something that is intended to be general purpose. Okay. Well, if you get even 1% of poison, essentially, content into this training data, the output becomes so unreliable that you now have to have a human fact check everything it emits, at which point the value of it's gone.
Well, you're back down,
right? Because
nothing,
the whole point was to get rid of the human. Okay.
Hey, we got 2 minutes. I don't want to get into some massive political discussion here, but the way the current administration is handling these things with China and these companies, and this NVIDIA, you know, seems to be, the guy's doing a two-step with Trump like I've never seen.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Like maybe Biden and Bill Gates or Obama and Bill Gates did it too. I don't know, but...
they did.
I this thing with, you know, okay, you can sell them this stuff, but we're going to get a 10% cut. You know, and then Kevin was talking about how We're not sending them, you know, he sent out the article yesterday about, you know, we're not selling them this, but oh, by the way, we're selling them time on the same server here. I'm getting this weird feeling that between the NVIDIA guy and Z, I think we're the chumps at the table, or am I wrong here, or am I just...
Well, no, I think you're right, but the bigger,
I don't want to be the chumps at the table. I don't care who's president. I mean,
well, yeah, but we are rapidly becoming the chumps at the table, and the problem that you have is that, and you know, I mean, again, one of the consistent points we've had is the amoral, you know, the amoral nature of how everything has gone when it comes to business in the United States, and politics for that matter as well. And the problem with that is that you are now grasping at things that are not going to work. We have every reason to believe will not work. And like the feedback problem with these AIs is something that's been known. They say, oh, this next model will fix it. Well, guess what? It never does. Okay. Now, so far they're 0-5. On claiming that this is resolvable in the next iteration of whatever they build. They're 0-5. If you have 5 at bats and you strike out 5 times in a row, the next time you're probably not going to hit a home run.
Is there a chance? And I just said we'll kick this around on Tuesday. Is there a chance some of the big firms like IBM, I think, almost needs to be broken apart from what they've done with the Chinese security system, if they want articles correct.
Well, so does Google and so does Amazon, but yeah.
I mean, these guys need to be, this can't happen. I don't know who has to be president, has the balls to do it, but I mean, Trump has a lot of balls. I don't think he has the balls to do that. Are they picking the winner, and they think the winner is going to be China and not us?
Well, China's basic problem is that they really aren't better or faster than us. What they are is more willing to screw both their own people and the environment. And because of that, they're always going to be cheaper.
But even Z...
Well, Chief, they're not better or faster, but they're cheaper.
But how far can you go? We had a group, again, this discussion for Tuesday. The group came over, one lady, I know nothing about Chinese geography, but I know something about... They've let the grass get eaten down so low so everybody here can buy... What's the kind of, it's not wool, it's the sweaters that don't scratch like that with all the name of the stuff. What's the other, like wool, but it's not. It's nicer.
Cashmere.
Yeah.
Whatever, yeah.
Well, she said there used to be, what, 6 rivers going through Beijing, and now there's 1 or none or something?
You take a look at the situation over in India. Okay, you still got half the people in that country that crap on the side of the road.
Well, yeah, they only half use toilets.
Well, I mean, this is, but this is what happens when you have, we literally, for all intents and purposes, crapped with our chemical plants in the rivers, right,
yeah.
for quite a long time. And then we decided as a country, we're not going to put up with that crap anymore. We're not going to do it. And so, okay, but do you, better, faster, cheaper, pick any two, all right? Well, you're always going to be cheaper if you are completely indifferent to what happens down the line from a standpoint of the environment and everything else.
Well, I think
you're always going to be cheaper.
I think there's also we'll talk about it on Tuesday, but the S&P futures up 50, NASDAQ is up 331. So we're the exact bounce from yesterday. Crazy stuff. Carl, we'll talk about it on Tuesday. Lou's all happy. The ski resorts are open. Are you going to the game tomorrow? Tennessee's playing somebody good, right?
Well, I'm actually not in Tennessee.
Well, there you go.
I'm speaking to you from a hotel room.
Okay. In Canada?
No. Actually, I'm in St. Charles.
Oh, good for you. Anyway, you have a good weekend wherever you are. We're back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks. Ricky, nice job. Everybody have a good weekend.
That's all, folks.